Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9. Here in our Channel 9 studios, I'm here at my desk to learn all about some of the new stuff with .NET New with the awesome Steve Sanderson. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, very good, thank you. How are you?
Good, you're in from the UK, huh?
I am indeed, yes, just for one more day.
And he leaves today, and so I'm so glad we could get you on here to talk about this stuff. So I don't know very much about this stuff. I did ASP.NET MVC like 1.0 in production.
Yep.
And I haven't done anything in production since, so I was hoping you could help me out with some of the new stuff.
Okay, right. So our goal is to try and make it much easier to get started with building single-page applications with things like Angular, React, Aurelia, and that sort of thing. And so we are shipping a bunch of templates and packages and other helpful things that will generally make your life a bit better.
So is this something that is a, like we're using Visual Studio Code, or is it something that it's like Visual Studio, the full-blown edition? Is it both?
It's all of these things. Okay. Yeah, so being a fully cross-platform platform now. Mm-hmm. We are not doing it things that are VS for Windows only.
Okay.
You know, there will be many things that work better in VS on Windows,
sure,
but everything is going to work everywhere.
Okay.
And so the basic approach that we're using for creating projects is a command line tool called .NET New, and that will work on any platform.
So before we do that, are there any prerequisites that I have to have on my machine in order for this to work?
You need to have an up-to-date version of .NET Core.
Okay.
So you need the 1.0 tooling.
Okay.
And you also need to have Node.js.
Okay. And that was something that, for some reason, I didn't have on my machine, and so now it's installed and we're ready to go.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. So what do I do? You'll drive, and then I'll ask 1,000 questions.
All right. Go ahead. So can you create a folder somewhere where you want to put your project?
Sure. We'll put it in here, and we'll call it something funny. Very good.
Okay, right. And can we have a command prompt in that folder?
I think there's a way if you press shift and right click.
Something like that.
Open PowerShell window, does that work?
That'll do, yeah.
Okay.
All right then. So let's start by running .NET new and see what templates you've got available.
So .NET new is like a file new project kind of thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So by default, it's able to create projects for MVC, for XUnit tests, that sort of thing, as you can see on that list there.
Okay.
You'll notice there's nothing to do with Angular or React or anything else like that.
No.
Right now. So we have to start by installing the template package.
Okay.
And you can do that with the command .NET new --install.
Okay.
And then the package name is Microsoft.ASP.NET Core. .spa templates, and this is a slightly weird quirk at the moment that we're about to change, but you have to specify what version you want to install. Now we'll just say we want the latest version, and to do that, without having a space, you have ::*? Now that is crazy, and we're going to change that really soon.
That?
Yeah, that's mad, isn't it? But anyway, we will change it to have something like --version, or you don't specify a version, or something like that. But as of today, that's how you say, give me the latest one.
That is how you say, give me the latest one?
Yeah. I know, that's mad. We will change that.
All right, I'm going to hit enter, and hopefully things don't blow up. I'm going to get a segmentation fault, aren't I?
Okay. So it has a slightly quirky install process that it's going through to make sure that we've got all the relevant .NET Core dependencies there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to actually install this template package. So when it's done that, which should be kind of now-ish, we should get an updated list.
Cool. And this updated list is going to have all of these SPA template things in them.
That's exactly right.
Can you give me, because I don't know if we talked about this, but can you tell me what's in there so that when we go into there, we're not going to be surprised? What are the new templates that are in there?
Okay, so there are 5 or 6, I'm not sure, templates for different client-side frameworks. We've got ones for Angular, for Aurelia, for Knockout, for React, with Redux, and for Vue.js.
Oh, the new Vue. Okay.
That's right.
Got it.
Yeah.
And are these, what kind of templates are there? Is it just the actual client-side stuff? Does it have the back-end stuff or like with Web API and stuff?
Yeah, so when we create the project, you'll see that it's an ASP.NET Core project, which has got a folder in it for your client-side code,
and it
sets up a build process for that client-side stuff as well.
So it looks like they're already here.
They are here now, yes. So yeah, you can see the list that I mentioned there, and we can create one of those in this directory now, if you would
so
like.
So I know a little bit about Angular. Is this Angular 2?
Well, yes it is, but also they don't want you to call it that. They just want you to call it Angular.
That's right.
Yeah.
I just heard about that. So this is the newest version of Angular.
Yes.
And then is this the newest Aurelia stuff? Or how? Like, I feel like how often are these things going to be updated?
Well, the level of traffic varies a little bit. This is a open source project, so the amount of community interest in different frameworks is different. So Angular tends to be extremely up to date.
Fast, yeah.
For another one like Aurelia, I can't say for sure. I think it might be a few months since we last updated that one.
Awesome, but it's just like if someone really has the like, wow, this should be really updated, they can go in there and change it.
Oh, absolutely, okay. Yeah. We'll take some pull requests every day, pretty much.
Awesome. All right. So which one should we do first? I feel like we should do at least two to see the differences.
Yeah. Well, let's do Angular and React because those are the two sort of biggest headline ones.
Okay.
So let's start with Angular, shall we? So if you do .NET new space Angular.
And that's the short name that we see over here, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Then that's going to lay down all the files that we need. If we open this in VS now, it will start restoring all the dependencies. But just as a little tip, a faster way of restoring the dependencies is to do it from the command line. So if you just write npm install right now, that's now going to fetch all of the Angular libraries and all the Webpack stuff and all the other client-side dependencies that we've got there. And we've actually got a progress bar so we can see what's going on. Now, I've heard that we're going to be making the Visual Studio package restore process more friendly than it is today. But yeah, if you just open it in VS, then it will do this for you, but you won't be able to see that it's doing it.
And for those that are coming from the .NET MVC world that are new to the client side, why don't you describe what npm is and then what npm install is doing?
Yeah, okay, and I probably should explain why we've got a dependency on Node.js here as well. Okay, so Node.js is, as I think probably everybody here in this knows, is a server-side JavaScript platform. And it's very, very widely used in the front-end web development world, not just as a system for serving web pages, but also as a system for doing building client-side assets and all kinds of other tooling that you would use at development time. You can't really avoid using Node and Node-based tooling if you're going to do any serious front-end development these days. It's just not an option. So much stuff is built around that. And so a thing that we're doing with these projects is integrating the stuff that you need from Node with ASP.NET Core in a very streamlined and straightforward manner. So you don't really have to know anything about Node other than how to install it. And basically, things are going to work together. In fact, we'll be able to see that as we go through.
So the other thing is, would you say that it's the case that there was already such a huge and vibrant ecosystem for client-side applications, particularly with Node and JavaScript, that it's like, why would we write another one, just use what's already there?
Oh yeah, well, it would be a crazy world where we try and compete with every other web developer in the world.
So the other thing is, this finished, should I be worried about any of the red things?
No.
Okay.
This is life with Node and NPM, is that everything is moving very fast. You will get random seeming warnings about stuff at different times. It's just not a sort of shrink-wrapped package that a corporation has signed off on, like the sort of things that Microsoft would have done 10 years ago.
Okay, cool. So now that I have this, I'm going to do an ls to see what's in there.
Yep.
Looks like everything's in there, and now there's this node module. So this is where it puts everything. Is
yeah,
right?
So all that stuff is in there, but we don't have to worry about what's in there.
Cool.
We could just go into Visual Studio now. So if you want to do, you can start from the command line, do start, what did you call it, funny.csproj.
Yeah, so let's see, funny. So I just type start, I don't see the csproj. Oh, there it is.
There you go.
So just say start.
Yep.
Csproj, and it looks at the folder name to create this project.
This is just the equivalent of double-clicking on funny.csproj in
No, I got that, but when we were doing the NPM,
it
looks at the folder and says, oh, that's kind of your project.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so we do want VS 2017 for this.
So that's another dependency. Make sure you have Visual Studio 2017.
Well, for this demo, it will be nice.
Okay.
But if you want to open it in VS Code, then that's absolutely going to work fine, too, or if you just want to edit your files with Notepad, whatever you like.
Awesome. All right, so here it is, it's loading up. All right, and it looks like it's loading everything up over here.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. All right then. So probably might be good for us to just see what the thing looks like when it's running, and then we can have a look at a little bit of code.
All right. So just hit.
Yeah, that should do it.
Okay. All right.
Ah, we're doing debugging. Okay. Yeah, debugging is a good feature that we can show later on, although it does make the thing slower to start up.
Okay, and this is happening because I just installed Node.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So there we go. All right, so you can see that it's not an empty project when it first comes up. It's trying to give you a sense of how you can structure your application into different pages and deal with like client-side routing, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So if you click through those different things on the left there, you'll see the URL updates. It's not doing server-side routing there. That's purely client-side with Angular's routing. And there's a demonstration of, you know, like a trivial way of fetching data from the back end there, and you know, a simple example of some logic. Do you want to see the code?
Yeah, let's do that. So this is literally just a, here is something that you would probably do just to get started. Obviously, change the icons, add more stuff, and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to use this sort of Bootstrap-based layout if you don't want to, but it's a very common thing. If you're doing a single-page application, you're probably building something like a dashboard or something like that. So you very likely that you do want something like this.
All right, let's take a look at the code. So very good. So now I'm looking over here at all of this stuff. Can you go through and explain? Because I see and I know.
Yep.
This is just the standard ASP.NET MVC
it is.
Stuff.
Yep.
There's a couple of new things in here, like for example package.json, which I'm guessing has to do with the client side dependencies.
Yes.
Okay, and then these are for the new ASP.NET Core, I'm
guessing.
That's
right, they are.
This is for if we're using TypeScript?
We are using TypeScript, yes.
Okay, and then webconfig, I know. Webpack config, I'm not sure about. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so in order for your application to actually run, it has to be built in some way because it's written in TypeScript, firstly, and obviously that has to be compiled to JavaScript.
Okay.
But also, there's a lot more going on to make it run because you've got many, many files that all have to be linked together. They themselves have got dependencies on HTML files and CSS files and that sort of thing. And Webpack is the dominant client-side build system today, and that brings all this stuff together and converts it all into these efficiently loadable bundles that can run in the browser.
So let me see if I understand this right, because the thing that I get confused on, I'm gonna make this completely white and see if I can draw, because when I'm looking at a website, there's literally two different sides that I need to worry about, right? There's the server, right? And then there's the client, right? So when we're talking about Webpack, we're talking about stuff for this.
That's, yes, correct.
Okay, so this is when we're talking about building stuff, we're talking about Webpack builds the client stuff. It gets all the JavaScript stuff and puts it together.
That is true, except in the very special case where you run your client-side stuff on the server.
Okay.
But we perhaps could get to that in a few minutes.
And so when we're talking about the server, for us, this is all just ASP.NET Core.
Yep, that's right.
So, and I want to be very clear because sometimes this becomes a little confusing, specifically when your server is all JS, right?
Yes, correct. Well, I don't know, confusing, but yeah, it's a different way of doing
confusing
things.
Confusing for me. Okay. I mean, you've looked at this for a long time. Okay,
yeah.
So this is telling us what we need to do with all the stuff that's inside of client app, which has all of the Angular stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
And the Angular code is fairly understandable. Let's ignore the boot client and boot server for a minute.
Okay.
But if we look in the app folder, that's where all of the stuff is that we were just running there. So the way Angular 2 and later applications are structured is that you have this module definition that says what other components should be imported and made available. Mm-hmm. You can see it's also defining the routing configuration down there on lines 22 through to 26.
Okay. So this is the routing, right?
Yes, that's right. That's mapping different URL patterns to different client-side components. And then those components themselves are up there in that components folder.
I see. So every time we have an empty path, it's just going to route to the home component, which is this thing right here.
That's right. So that's the markup that we saw a minute ago. A good one to look at is the counter one, because you can see a little bit of logic in that as well. If you expand that HTML file, it's kind of weird that if you expand it in Solution Explorer.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Morning.
It's pretty weird that the TypeScript file is embedded, is nested within the HTML file. That's something that we recognize is weird and bad, and we shouldn't do that. So we're going to change that. But you can see that there's the logic for the counter application, pretty simple stuff. And that defines the relationship between this TypeScript class and the HTML file, the template file there.
I see. So this obviously is using, these are called attributes. I mean, they're called attributes in .NET. What are they called in?
Decorators.
Decorators. So the decorator is saying, here's the selector. Whenever we see this, we're going to put this template into it. And then this is the logic behind the template. And then here is the thing we call increment count. And this is obviously Angular sort of way of saying this is handling an event and then how to handle it. And then this is doing like handlebar type stuff to get the current count.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've learned a thing or two.
Well done.
Okay. Okay. So where is the root of all of the, like where, I'm trying to see, because like, my confusion is, obviously this needs to be defined inside of a web page. Is that web page in one of the views?
Yes, okay, so if you look in the home index view there, you will see this special element called app there on line 5.
Okay.
And since app is the selector for our root Angular component there, when Angular starts up, it will see that element and it will bootstrap the application inside that element.
Where, now here's the crazy question, and this is going to show my ignorance, and I'm okay with this because he's going to tell me. Where is all this stuff getting bundled and put in? How do we know that it's coming into here?
This is defined in the Webpack configuration.
Okay.
So we are telling Webpack where to output the bundles, and you can see it's on line 13 there. We're defining the output name as being the name of the bundle. But actually, a little bit more relevant would be line 32 if you scroll down a little bit further. That's saying that for the client-side code, we're putting everything in the client bundle output dir, which is defined on 29 as www.dist.
I see. So this thing right here. So here's www.root, but I don't see the dist. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Here we go. There it is.
Yep, there it is.
And this Webpack literally bundled this all into one thing.
Yeah.
And that's why when we go to the index.cshtml, it's saying, look, just go to dist and that's where it's going to be.
Yep.
Okay.
That's right.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, cool. All right. So now that I've done that, let me take a look at sort of the interaction, because the one that was interesting was the third one that actually pulled the table, because that's where that boundary between the client and the server is happening. Is
yes,
that right?
That is correct.
All right. So can we take a look at that? Where should I go to see
how it's working? Sure. Do you want to see the client side code or the server side?
Let's do client side first.
Okay. So if you go into client app components, fetch data, and expand the thing there until you can see the TypeScript logic.
Okay.
Then you can see that we're using Angular's HTTP API to make a request to a local, you know, a relative URL for sample data.
And this is just a path to some web API, it looks like it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you look in the controllers folder, you'll see the sample data controller.
Okay.
And inside there, in a realistic application, of course, you'll be getting some data from a database.
Sure.
We didn't want to take a dependency on that for a project template, so we just throw some random data out there for you can see.
So basically, right now, if I'm like, I want to pull a list of customer or a list of products, for example, all I would do is I would just change this and return the JSON, and then I would go to the client app under fetch data, and I would make sure that this was formatted according to the data that's being returned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, this is pretty cool. What other gotchas should we be worried about when it comes to this?
Gotchas?
Like when I'm, because one of the things that I'm used to when I'm doing client-side applications is when I run it and I make a change in the JavaScript, I've seen there's this magic stuff happening where it just sort of reloads.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so that's a feature called hot module replacement, which is a really helpful feature. We can probably see that work in here if we want to.
Let's do it.
So if we, if you go in your browser to this fetch data screen.
Run it.
Well, let's not do it with debugging this time, just because it will be quicker.
So let me make sure to stop it then here.
So if you can do a run without debugging from the, is it from the build menu.
Let's see here. So we'll go to build.
Or press Control F5.
Oh, okay, Control F5. I'll wait for this to stop thinking. Come on! Stop now.
Wow.
I must have done something really bad. Give it a second. Okay.
There we go.
So now Control F5, or I can where do I do run without, start without debugging?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So let's, just so that people can see, let's open the browser's debug console. I'm not sure how to do that with a menu, but I always press Control-Shift-I.
Control-Shift-I. Okay.
All right. Now, you can see down at the bottom there, it says HMR connected. It's uh-huh. kind of tiny, but we can make it bigger if you want, if you press in there and do Control plus a few times.
Control plus. Okay.
Right. Okay, good. So we can see that it's what HMR does is it keeps open a connection. I think it's using WebSockets, but that's an implementation detail, mm-hmm. Between the application in the client and the server.
Okay.
So that the server can notify it when there's a new version of any of the code. Now, this is only for development time. It creates all kinds of overheads that you would not want in production. It's just to make you more productive and happier when you're writing your code.
Okay.
So let's see it actually do something. Can I just
sure.
do a bit of clicking for a second? I just want to make this a bit wider so we can see that and go over here and also make this a little bit bigger.
Okay.
There we go. All right. So let's say we wanted to change our design for this table a little bit. We could go back into Visual Studio here and we'll go and say, well, we want to change something here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that whenever we display this summary, we're going to do it in uppercase. So I'll do two uppercase like that. And then I'm going to click on the Save button here. And when I do click on the Save button, you'll see in the browser it's immediately changed to have the uppercase version of the stuff.
Oh, well, that's handy.
Yeah, so you don't have to change back to your browser if you've got multiple screens. You don't have to reload or anything like that. And if you make mistakes, then you know it's going to give you error messages in a useful way. In some cases, it can preserve the state of the application as it's running as well. So not in the Angular case, but in the React case, when you make a change to your code or whatever, it will update, but the application state continues. So whatever sequence of clicks or whatever you've done in the browser have not been lost. You don't have to keep redoing your work over and over.
Because I imagine there's a scenario where you've clicked into like 30 things,
yeah.
and there's certain things, because if I remember right, React maintains state in a global way.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because then you don't have to reset and you have to find your way back down the rabbit hole. That's super nice. You're saying in the case of Angular, it doesn't do that?
It does it only to a more limited extent. It can remember what page you're on. For example, it didn't forget that we were on this weather forecast
sure.
page. But it doesn't track the state that's actually within the components. For example, in the counter case, you can see the counter's tracking this internal state here. Mm-hmm. It can't preserve that across application updates.
Which kind of makes sense, too.
Well, it would have no way that knowing that state is even there. Mm-hmm. It's only different in React because it does have this global store
sure.
for your state.
Awesome. So any other things that I should be looking at when I'm building this style of application? I mean, is there an argument to be made? Because I've wondered this, too. Maybe you can help me. Is it better to have a separate project for the client application and a separate project for the API application? Or is it better just to have them both together and then you can separate them later? Is it something that you should even consider separating? What do you think?
I think there are arguments for both ways okay. of doing things. It's probably easier in most cases just to have a single project.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the strongest argument for that is that you've then definitely got a sort of atomic unit of deployment.
Right.
You're never going to be in a situation where you've got a newer version of the front end and an older version of the back end and they can't talk to each other or something.
Right.
But there'll be other cases where you've got an entirely separate team working on the front end versus the back
sure.
end. And so there may be a necessity for doing that in that case.
Awesome. Anything else I need to think about when I'm working on this stuff? This this is kind of counterintuitive. I was wondering where those things were.
Yeah, I know. We know that's strange.
And this is here for the testing.
Yeah, do you want to see the tests run?
Absolutely.
Okay. So at the moment, the way that we launch the tests are from the command line.
Okay.
So let's just start them, and then we can actually have a look at the contents of the tests. Okay. In there, if you type npm space test.
Oops, sorry.
That is going to start up Karma. Now,
okay.
Karma is the de facto standard testing framework for Angular applications. And it works by running your code in an actual browser, as you can see there.
Oh, wow.
And it's using WebSockets to push tests in and get the results of the tests back out. So in this case, you know, our default tests passed, as you'd expect. But a cool thing about it is that it doesn't exit after it's finished running. It's still there and running. And it's just like the HMR, it's also watching for changes. So when you change your code, your test results will automatically update as well.
Which is kind of cool, because in theory, you could have hot module reloading and the test running in separate browsers at the same time.
That's right. It's a good argument for having three monitors side by side.
I'm just saying. Now we found a way for you as a dev to ask for three monitors. Awesome. Awesome. All right. So anything else before we move on? Is I want to see the React one as well.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Right.
No, let's move on and...
All right, so control C this?
Yeah, that will work.
So
that won't work. It will just keep bringing your browser back.
Oh, my goodness. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right, so terminate batch job. And then do I need to hit stop on the other one because this is still running?
You don't really need to. It doesn't matter. We can leave that. We can have them both going side by side.
Okay. So now I have to make a new folder.
Let's go back up one from there and then make something new.
MKDIR. CD React, and then let's see if I get this right. .NET new React.
Let's do the Redux one.
Okay, Redux.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And then it's going to do all that. Oh, it did it.
It's done it, yeah. We'll do the npm install as well at this point.
Install.
Yeah.
And my guess is that everything is going to be very similar when it comes to the project structure, specifically like how the controllers are laid out, how the views are laid out, and then there's going to be some in the index.html or the index.cshtml. There's going to be like one, I don't know if they're called direct or just one angle bracket that says put everything in here.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so .NET doesn't know the difference between you running Angular or React, of course. We've been able to keep the build systems for the two very similar to each other. The feature set is very similar. It's really just a matter of developer preference. What kind of client-side framework you want to go with.
Okay. So we'll wait till this loads up, and then I will... Would it be useful to open this one up in Visual Studio Code, or is there going to be a difference in the development experience?
We can do this in VS Code. It would be nice to see both sides of it,
All right, let's do it. So I'm going to close this down. Oh, it looks like it's looking for a solution file.
Oh, yeah. So usually you would add one of these to a solution, I suppose.
Okay. So I'll hit save.
If you want.
All right, so this is all done. I'm going to say code dot, and then I'm going to bring my window over here because it was on the other side.
Yep.
Very good. Okay.
VS Code icons. Wow, I've never seen that before. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Hit restart. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a special, like there's a, I have like VS Code icons and other things. So I need to update some of the stuff, but it makes everything look kind of pretty, at least to me. So let me see if I can go through this and if I got it right. So here is where the controllers are. This is the same stuff we saw before. Oh, wow, looks like it's ready to update. Mm. I'll put later. We have the same. Oh, okay, so let's hit restore. Let's hit yes. Very good. So it looks like what it did is it said, hey, there's some .NET stuff that I need to know about so that we can get IntelliSense and other things. There was some other stuff that we need to know about with React, and looks like it's got that. So this is the same controller we had before.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then this is the home controller, which is the thing we saw before. I'm going to go to Views, and I'm going to go to Home, and I'm going to look at Index, and there's going to be, there it is, the React app. Looks like it's the Webpack is going to be pushing everything into the dist folder inside of the WW root. So let me find that. Looks like I'm not finding it. There it is. So there's this distribution icon, and this is what Webpack is building. Is
that's right? Correct. Yes.
All right. So now I've never used React. Maybe you can walk me through and tell me what this is doing just a little bit so people can get their feet wet.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So this particular example is React plus Redux.
Okay.
Redux is an application architecture. It's what they call a state container. So it manages the changes of state of your application over time. And it forces you to use a very sort of elaborate API for specifying how state is going to change okay. over time. And at first glance, you might just think, oh my goodness, that is so ridiculously elaborate. Why would anyone do that? The reason for this kind of abstraction is so that you can definitely know why each change occurred in your application. It will keep a running log of all the state changes that have occurred. And you can see everything that's happened historically. You can step backwards and forwards in time using the debugger, so you can sort of replay user actions and so on. And all that stuff is independent of changes to your code. So with hot module reloading, you could, let's say if you discover a bug in your application, you can use the debugger to step backwards and forwards through time to check that you're reproducing the bug properly. You can then edit your code, have your application update without losing all this debugging history, and then continue stepping backwards and forwards and check whether your fix has actually worked. So
the other thing I heard, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is that React keeps this thing called the shadow DOM, so that it actually, whenever there's a change to the DOM, because that happens all the time, it only changes what it really has to.
Oh, I think you're thinking of the virtual DOM.
The virtual DOM, yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it does. So it does have its own model for the DOM, and it does a fast diffing algorithm so that it knows what to change. Yeah, but that's not particularly unique to React anymore. Right. They were the ones who really innovated and created this concept, but basically everyone's copied them since then.
He's laying down the truth bombs. I love it. All right, so what am I looking at here?
All right, then. So. So remember I told you that Redux is a state container.
Uh-huh.
So the store folder there is where all the different types of state are being tracked. If you have a look in the counter one, then you'll be able to see that there's a lot of boilerplate code, which might look alarming at first. But really, the only bits that you have to understand is the thing between lines 6 and 8 there. That defines what state we're actually tracking for okay. the counter, which in this case is just a number. And then if you scroll down so that you can see lines 35 and onwards, you can see that we're defining these different types of actions that can occur that produce different states.
Oh, I see. So they're really, these are all, it's almost like message passing
yeah.
for state
yes.
is what it looks like.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why I understand how it can be replaced. There's obviously some central place where all these things are like, well, you incremented 3 times and then decremented 4 times,
yeah.
and the number came out wrong, and you're going to obviously be able to replay that. That makes
yeah,
a lot of sense.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
And so this is just for the state, not for the user interface. For the actual visible UI, we've got the components folder
okay.
up there. And if we have a look in the counter one there, you'll see that's relatively simple. So we've got this render method, which is going to display the current count that's coming from the state container.
Okay.
And then we've got the onClick method that will trigger the action that increments the state.
Okay.
And everything around that is just boilerplate for linking up this React component with the underlying part of the state container.
So there's obviously a lot going on here, and it feels like I could dive into this. Because one of the interesting things is that like this doesn't seem like normal JavaScript to me.
Right, yeah, okay. So this is a TSX file.
Oh, I see.
Now, another one of React's great innovations. I'm a big fan of the React team. They've done some really remarkable stuff. One of their cool innovations was coming up with JSX, which is a syntax for putting markup directly inside JavaScript files so that you can return DOM elements as literals from functions and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And TSX is just a generalization of that to TypeScript. So it's a flavor of a TypeScript file in which you can use DOM elements as if they were objects, where
I
you just
see.
Assign them to variables and so on.
It feels like we're crossing the streams, though. I was told never to do this kind of thing in JavaScript like 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, that advice just is not particularly useful in this sort of a world.
And it makes sense because, like, the kind of complexity that is involved. Look, when I did JavaScript, the first time I was doing an image hover.
Yeah.
Right, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and this is not that at all.
No, this is a proper application. Yeah.
And then the other thing that's interesting that I remember is that you can't you only can return one element.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so you would always have to wrap whatever list of things you're returning in a single element.
All right, and obviously there's some other ones in here that do the stuff that was in there before. Like, for example, rendering on the home literally is just putting out this page.
Yeah, exactly. Right? There's not even any data there.
Yeah, and then the fetch data looks like this one's a little bit more involved.
Oh, yeah. So this has got more functionality than in the Angular example because we wanted to demonstrate a little bit more of how you deal with interactions between the user and the underlying state. So in this case, we've got paging controls. We could run the application, actually, so you can see
Let's do it. How do I do that?
So let's do it in the command line. Just
do there.
Ooh. Yeah. Right, OK. And so then we should be able to let's make sure that we're definitely in debug mode. I don't know what your environment variables are, but if you can type, or can I just type?
Yeah,
it's going to be easier. So if we type set ASP.NET core environment equals development, this might be the default anyway, I'm not sure. And then we can do .NET run.
And I like the idea of doing it just in case, because if you have a problem, then make sure that the environment is set. Is this like, where is this variable being stored?
Oh, I didn't even type that correctly. So as you can see, it says host and environment production there because I've got a typo in the environment variable. So let's fix that. Ah. What I meant to type is ASP.NET core with a T there.
Okay.
And now if I run .NET run again, hopefully we will see it come up saying no. That's strange.
So is there anywhere we could look over here on the
Okay, I just want to do this from a regular command prompt.
Let's do it.
Let's see if that works. Oh, this is PowerShell. That's going to require something different still. So let me go old school on this.
Okay. And then CD desktop.
And oh, you do this bit.
CD desktop and then wrong slash and then React.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's try this again. Set ASP.NET core. Oh, I mistyped again. Does that look correctly typed? Probably. And we will see. Now it comes up in development. So I don't know what's going on in the VS Code prompt there. Okay, so we can ignore these fail things. That's just a temporary issue with, we recently updated to Webpack 2, and some of the third-party plugins for that have not fully suppressed all of the warnings, but it doesn't actually cause any problems. That's just a development time thing.
Okay.
So anyway, if we open a browser now in localhost port 5000.
All right, so localhost 5000, okay. Oh, this is cool, this is all shut down.
Yeah. Okay, so there's the React application, but the slightly different behavior now is you see we've got these previous and next buttons there, and you can see the URL updating as you do that.
Oh, that's cool.
It was just, it's not completely obvious how to wire up routing or routing, as you say, with Redux, and so we wanted to have a simple demonstration of that.
I see. So would you say that people should use this template as a basis for their project or as a basis for learning, or this is good enough to start changing things?
Yeah, tons of people are using this as a basis for their project, and you absolutely can do that. Yeah.
Okay.
When we looking a little bit further ahead, some of the meetings we've been having this week has been trying to decide exactly what future versions of this might look like, and we would like to be able to ship more than one version of each of these templates.
Sure.
So we would ship a completely empty version, which is like, you already know what you're doing. We're not putting any stuff in there that you're going to have to delete. And then there would be the starter app version, which is like what you see.
I see.
Yeah. So hopefully it gives people the right sort of prompt.
This is awesome. So I'm looking at the Webpack config here, and this is just saying you need to do some stuff with TSX. And that's why I'm seeing the Babel loader here, because that's what compiles a TSX. Is that right?
Yeah. So Babel, or Babel, depending on how you like to pronounce it, is very widely used in the React world.
Okay.
And it has special It has plugins that know stuff about JSX and TSX, and it's going to apply some additional features to the application to do with, for example, the hot module reloading in this particular case depends on that.
So if it's this is loaded, it's running right now. If I go in there and let's see if I can, let me go to my mouse. There we go. I'm going to say a squirrel. I don't know, squirrel. And if I save this, it should reload it, right?
Yeah, so you're seeing squirrel. But also, the state would not have been lost. So if you make a further change after...
Okay, so let's do that, and let's go to puppy. And let's see how fast I can go. Control S. Nice.
Yep. Okay, so you see that the state is still there.
Oh, that's super nice, too. And where do you go to see the log of things that were done?
You need to install a browser plugin that we perhaps should have done before we started
recording.
Is
that this one right here?
Oh, it is. Nice. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So why is it not the turn on? Let's see here.
So.
Let's go over here. No. React. There you go.
Okay. So you've got a different version of it than I'm used to. So I don't actually know what's going on here. But yeah, clearly we can see the actual store there.
And there's the router history of things that we've done.
There's a... Oh, hold on. Is that the React DevTools? It's not the Redux ones?
Yeah, it's React
DevTools. Okay, yeah. So you need to install the Redux DevTools if you want.
I see. But in this case, I'm still able to see how things are getting laid out.
Yeah,
with React. Okay. And there's a Redux tool that will do similar things as well. And this is telling me what's inside of the actual store.
This is showing you the data that is behind everything that's been rendered just there.
So where do I find the number 14? So this would be props, no, store.
Yeah, it probably is in props.
So,
and then in children. And you would have to navigate your way down until you find the relevant component.
I see.
And it might even be possible to use the thing where you click on the element that you're interested in.
This.
You click that thing, the one on the left, top left.
This.
Yes. And then click on there. Does that... See, I haven't used the React DevTools. I don't know what that does or not.
Well, this is cool, though, that it lets you do this.
Yeah.
And so then if you had the Redux tool, you'd be able to see this a little bit.
Yes, you would, yeah. Should we have a look at the server-side rendering?
Let's do it.
Okay. So let's keep that going there.
Okay.
And what should we do? Okay, let's, can we expand the, let's close all of this stuff down for a minute, and let's go into the fetch data screen there. So what is happening at the moment, each time we hit reload, which I'll hit here like that, the application is running initially on the server, so it's producing all of the DOM stuff that we can see there. It's sending that initial HTML down to the browser, and then the client-side code loads in the background, and when it's loaded, then it takes over execution.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to actually prove that that works, we could even disable JavaScript and see that it's still the application
How
still comes
that?
Up. So if we go back into the DevTools again.
There we go. So more tools.
Developer tools, there we go. Yeah. All right, and then press F1 in here.
F1.
And then you've got disable JavaScript down there.
Okay.
So now if you go back and hit reload on the other side, keep the DevTools open because it only disabled. Yeah, there you go. So you can see that even though there's no JavaScript enabled in the browser at all right now, it's still working correctly. And we can even do basic things like navigation.
How is it doing that? This is a part I don't understand, right? Because this was rendered with TSX files, right?
Yes, indeed, yes. So let's switch back into VS Code.
Okay.
And go to the MVC view, the home index view.
Okay, so we'll go to views and then index, okay.
Now you can see that we've got this ASP pre-render module tag helper on there.
Oh.
And that is using a feature from one of the packages that we've recently shipped. That tells the server that when it's rendering this Razor view, it's going to evaluate the contents of a JavaScript module and insert that into the output. And this main server file thing, that's getting built by Webpack, but primarily it's coming from this boot-server TSX file. And you can see this is the logic that is necessary for starting up and rendering a React application. It's fairly long there, it's like 47 lines. There's less logic in the Angular case, but it doesn't really matter because this is fairly stock boilerplate stuff that's going to work for any application. You can see on line 14 it's taking the URL on the server and matching it against your client-side routing configuration. Then after it's done that, it's figuring out whether there's a redirection to apply, in which case it will do that on the server. If not, then by the time we get down to lines 30 and 38, it's building the React components needed to render the application.
On the server?
On the server. This is all server-side code. Yep.
Is Node doing this?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so behind the tag helper that I showed you, the ASP.NET pre-render module tag helper, we're making calls through a NuGet package called microsoft.asp.net core.node services. And that is capable of starting up instances of Node and performing calls from .NET code into Node and getting the results back out in a very fast and robust manner. So we can integrate Node functionality at runtime with .NET functionality all on the server.
And this is interesting because now you've come to a situation where, like, if JavaScript isn't working, this will automatically detect it, right?
If JavaScript isn't working on the browser, then the user will still see the application.
But how does the application know to switch over to rendering this on the server?
It's always rendering on the server, regardless of whether there's JavaScript in the browser.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So because it's for performance primarily. We're not seriously trying to make a React application work with no JavaScript,
right,
because only the most basic things will work like that. As soon as you've got like a button that opens a modal dialog or something like that, none of that's going to work. The point of this is all about performance. So your application bundle might be half a megabyte and your end user might be on a 3G connection and they might have a slow CPU in their low-end mobile device. And if the only way they could see the application is after downloading your half megabyte bundle, parsing all the code, rendering all the DOM, and so on, it might take 10 seconds before they see your application, which is too long. So if we pre-render it all on the server, they get that initial HTML immediately before JavaScript's even involved.
At what point am I thinking, like, why would I, if I'm doing it all on the server, and this is going to be a hard question, maybe you can help me with that.
Yeah.
Why would I go through the trouble of having everything in Angular, I'm sorry, in React, if I could just render views like I used to?
Because you're writing just one application now, the one single page application, which gives you fully rich client-side functionality using a technology like React or Angular, which is fully designed for stateful client-side applications. The fact that we can pre-render it on the server is a performance hack. It's not intended to replace client-side execution.
Oh, I see. So what it's saying is anything you can do on the server, do it, but everything else we got to do on the client side.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, look, I totally get that. Yeah, I thought you were, because what I thought you were saying is, yeah, we're doing all the JavaScript work on the server, and now everything you get on the client side is going to be hunky-dory, but it's not. It's only what it can do on the server it will do, and everything else is on the client.
Yeah, so what it can do on the server is everything apart from respond to user interaction. So it can render the initial page as HTML, but unless there's JavaScript, when the user clicks on a button, nothing's going to happen.
Got it. That makes a lot more sense, because then all of the DOM creation and all of the elements will already be shuffled over and it's just already ready to go. Because I've seen applications, and this annoys me, where the DOM loads and then there's spinners everywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is complete garbage.
Yeah.
And this will prevent that from happening.
Yeah, so in the example where we're fetching data here, if I hit reload, like even when we've got JavaScript enabled, let's make sure we have. So let's get the JavaScript back and hit reload up here. Okay, so normally, if we weren't doing server-side rendering, in fact, let's turn server-side rendering off for a second. So if you quickly want to turn server-side rendering off, what you can do is we'll just change this tag helper to something that's not a real tag helper at all. So it's just garbage right now. It won't implement anything. When I hit reload, you'll see that it's coming up so quickly that we can't really see much happening.
But you still see like a maybe 200 millisecond delay.
You see a tiny, tiny flash, yeah. In fact, let's make this more obvious. If we go into, network, throttling, let's throttle this down to 3G speed. Okay, and I hit reload. Now you'll see that loading on the screen for a little while it fetches all the stuff. And also, if we look in the list of XHR requests, the AJAX requests, you'll see that it's requested weather forecasts that's returned all this JSON data. So this is what we're waiting for on the client, for it to fetch all that data. Whereas if we do have server-side rendering enabled, like this, then when I come back over here and reload, then even though we're on 3G speeds, it came up there. I know you couldn't see it change, but it was there in like 1 second.
Yeah, it was.
And also, it has not made the request to the server for that data because it's already got it.
Yeah.
So the server-side state of the application has been transferred to the client, which then continues the execution where the server left off.
Oh, I see, which is super nice because I have always complained. It's like, look, if you have to put a spinner on the first page, something's not right.
Yeah, like why didn't you fetch that data when you were already on the server?
This makes a lot of sense. Is this something that's being done for the Angular case as well?
So in the Angular case, the server-side rendering is entirely there. It's a little bit different in terms of transferring application state because Redux is the thing that's allowing us to do this transfer of state right now. Now, if you wanted, you could build an Angular application with Redux, in which case you could do the same thing. But not very many people do. That's a bit of an edge case right now. So with the Angular template as we've got it, yes, server-side rendering works. But in terms of transferring application state, it's only transferring the URL, essentially.
Got it.
It will refetch the data when it hits the client.
Awesome.
So there are ways around that, but that's what would happen by default.
All right, so let's see if there's any other questions I have before. So there was two other things that I wanted to ask you about. This was the boot server stuff. This is the server-side rendering.
Yep.
What's the boot client? Because I saw this was also available. These two files were also in the Angular case as well.
Yes, correct, yeah. So you've got one application which runs on server and client, but the way that your application starts is different on the server versus on the client.
Got it.
So we've got these two different boot files. On the client, it's in the React case, it's pretty straightforward. So, you know, we're just referencing all the libraries that we want. We're creating an initial empty Redux state container here. We're wiring it up to the routing, and then we're telling React to get started, basically.
Okay. And then so on the other one, let's see if I can go to it here. I'm going to close this. cd:// funny, and then I'll do code dot. For the client app, there it is, boot server, and this was a boot client.
Yep, exactly.
And it's the same, and this is, okay, and this was the hot module reloading stuff.
Yeah, so the content is very different between React and Angular in these two cases, but it serves the same purpose of starting your application.
Awesome, okay. So let's go back to, just to finish up, unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about.
That's all good.
How do I package this thing for deployment?
Yeah, great, okay. So at the moment, in development, we are serving quite large bundles to the browser. In fact, we could probably measure this. So if we, let's see, we can do a .NET run in there. So it starts the Angular,
No problem.
.NET run.
Okay.
Okay, so that's gonna start up the Angular application in development mode, hopefully.
Okay.
Yep, it does. And then in a browser, if we get that running.
Localhost 5000.
Yep. And then back in the DevTools, again, I've always got my DevTools window open.
Of course. You said Control Shift I?
Yeah, that'll do it. Now on the network, in fact, yeah, let's just do a reload there.
Okay.
And click on all up here so we can see all of the requests that it's made.
Okay.
Now you can see that main, in fact, you're loading from cache here. If you can click on disable cache and then reload, you can see that the vendor.js file
is fetched. Holy cow!
4.6 megabytes. Okay. So that's pretty immense. And
it's like a picture.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So the development builds are massive because there's no minification. And also, they're including source maps. So we've kind of got the entire code twice,
Wow. Both
the JavaScript version and the TypeScript version with all your comments and everything. So, you know, it's massive. It's great for debugging. Like if you go into the sources tab there, and can you press Control O and then start typing counter? Yeah, there we go. So you can see that we've got the original TypeScript source code there. It all works. We can set breakpoints on that, and you know that's all going to work. So we can debug the original TypeScript code rather than
the. That's what the source maps are there for.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is. But you do not want all that stuff in production.
No.
Because one, it's massive, and two, it contains your source code, which you maybe don't even want to distribute.
Right.
So you want to make a efficient production build.
Yes.
For this stuff. Now, you can do that from Visual Studio, but we've already closed that, so let's do it from the command line.
Okay.
If we can just do Control C on that.
All right.
And then do .NET publish.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I'm not finished with that yet. Control C on that a bit. Go back to that. .NET publish. -C for configuration, space release. Okay, so that's going to do a release build.
Okay.
If you press go on that, yep. Now, this is exactly the same. If you're in Visual Studio 2017 and you go to the publish option from the menus, all that's going to do is run this. So the same output, whether you do it from the command line or from VS. And it's building the .NET code in release mode. It's also rebuilding all the client-side stuff as a production build. So the first thing it's doing is checking that we've got the packages, just in case you didn't, like on your CI server or something. And then after that, you can see,
I'm closing everything else.
Okay, all right. So you see it's also producing these production builds of the application. Now it's building more than one thing here. It's building the client-side bundles. It's also building the server-side bundles. Now the server-side stuff is still massive because there's no reason to bother doing minification or something on stuff you're not sending down to the browser. Now the client-side stuff, still kind of massive at 1.7 megabytes, but this is before gzipping. So when you actually serve this over the wire to a web browser, it's going to be something like a quarter to a third of this actual size going over the wire. So it's a lot more reasonable. But also, it's going to be getting a lot smaller still very soon. So just as of this week, we've managed to get the Angular 2 ahead of time compilation stuff working with this. And that allows a feature in Webpack called tree shaking, where pulls out all the parts of the libraries that you're not actually using. And so the build sizes that I'm getting right now after gzipping are about 110 kilobytes. So that's
not bad.
Yeah, it's a big improvement over the 4.5 megabytes that we were seeing in your browser just then. So yeah, this build thing now has produced a directory locally that contains some code that's ready to go to production. If you go, it's not an obvious location, but it's in bin release.
Well, that's where we're used to seeing in .NET, right?
And then inside there, inside netcore app, and then I think a further directory called publish.
Oh, there it is. In cd publish, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the stuff that actually goes onto your web server there. So if you're using VS, then it already knows this, and that's the stuff it's going to upload to Azure or wherever else you're deploying to. And that's all fully production ready, minified, bundled, no source code, etc.
Nice. Okay, this is the distribution. The distributed.
So that, although it says client app, this is purely for server side execution.
Okay.
That's never going to get served to the browser. And you see, there's no TypeScript sources in there.
And then the WW route, this is the stuff that actually goes to the browser.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Makes perfect sense. All right, where can people go to find out more about this stuff? Obviously, there's no way we can cover everything that happened. Where can we go to find out more about this stuff?
A good starting point would be a blog post that got published on the ASP.NET team blog a couple of weeks ago. I don't have the URL for that, but perhaps I can get that to you.
Sure, absolutely, and we'll put it below. Well, this has been super helpful. Thanks so much for spending an hour with me. Obviously, I need to dive into it a little bit more.
Okay.
This has been very helpful. Thanks to Steve. And if you are working on ASP.NET Core stuff with some client-side stuff, there are some new project templates that you should use. We just took a look at two of them. Make sure to take them out, kick the tires, and let us know how they're working.
Great. All right. Thank you
very much. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.